Working Cows Podcast, episode 188.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Conry, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another episode for you guys, powered by the Global Ag Network. Really excited to be joined today by a legend in holistic management, especially in Canada. Don Campbell is a guy who's been doing it for a long time, one of those folks who learned it right from Alan Savory himself, and so really excited about this opportunity. He has been involved at all levels of Holistic Management International, HMI, in Canada pretty much since it got going up there, and also is an integral part even to this day in his family ranch, and just a unique opportunity today to talk to Don about the grazing principles as holistic management outlines them, and just a really unique opportunity again to get a perspective from somebody who's been doing it for a long time and somebody who has successfully transitioned his operation to another generation. Just lots of good fodder here for discussion with Don. So Don, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
I was privileged to meet you at the Holistic Management Canada Conference at the very beginning of 2020, so just over a year ago. I got to meet you and talk with you a little bit out in the trade show area, and just really enjoyed the opportunity to hear you speak that weekend. So I guess I'd like to hear a little bit about how you got into holistic management and how, what kind of difference it's made on your ranch and in your operation.
Yeah, well, I got into holistic management in 1985, and the way it happened, there was a conference in Saskatchewan, actually at Saskatoon, and one of the speakers was Jerry Holtman. And Jerry was in his preamble to his talk or his write-up, he said, "You can double your grass by how you manage your grazings." And I was a young rancher. I was about 40 years old, and I thought, boy, double the grass, that's for me. I'm going to go. So I went, and I heard Jerry speak, and he talked about planned grazing and holistic management. I talked to him after the conference. It made a big impact on me, and that was, basically where it started. And it's 85, what's that, about 35 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's gone on a long time, and it's been exceptionally good.
Yeah. And so what were some of the first things that changed on your ranch?
Well, basically, Jerry talked about the grazing because that's what he was interested in, and that's what the conference was about. But he also talked about the bigger picture of holistic management. And holistic management is how to make better decisions. And because I was interested in the grass, that's what I did. I came home and I started fencing and moving my cattle. And as soon as I did that, right away I could see the results. Mm. And then those results were positive, so that motivated me to want to do more. And it just kept on for a lifetime.
Very good. So did you grow up on the place that you're on now?
Yes. My dad owned this ranch since 1948. But we lived in Meadow Lake, which is about 16 miles from the ranch. We spent a lot of time in the ranch. We always lived in Meadow Lake. My dad had a store in Meadow Lake, small general store. He sold groceries, men's clothing, Western wear, trapping supplies. So I had kind of both lives. I had the life on the ranch because we were here lots, and I had the life in town because that's where we live.
Sure.
My wife and I moved here in 1972, and we've been on the ranch since 1972.
What are some of the principles as holistic management teaches them as far as grazing or grazing is concerned? How is holistic management approaching these grazing principles?
Well, in holistic management, we call it planned grazing. So we make a plan before the growing season ever starts. And, depending on your goal, everybody might do it a little differently. But basically, most people are trying to graze so that the land improves, so that we get more production off a set land base over time. And that's, you know, so critical to making your ranch financially viable. So we focus on things like the recovery period, which is grazed on a certain day, say May the 1st. How many days do you come back and graze it again? That's one of the critical pieces. The other thing is to have a short graze period, so you don't stay too long. So if you were to sum up planned grazing, you might say, well, you know, don't stay too long at one time and don't come back until the plants have fully recovered before you graze them a second time. In a nutshell, that's it. Now we can get into a lot more detail.
So what does that look like on your in your context? Some places have a 45-day recovery. Some places have a 700-day recovery period. So what does it look like where you're at?
Well, like right where on our ranch, we're using an 85-day recovery. And I wouldn't say that's right for anybody but us. When I teach, I did a lot of teaching with holistic management, and I would suggest people would have between a 60 and a 90-day recovery. And if you're in a really dry area, it might be over 90, might not be enough. Now, my experience has been that it's between that 60 and 90, and as you move closer to the 90, you tend to be more satisfied. Mm. When I first started off, I took the course, the fellows that were teaching it were from Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was Roland Cruz and Kirk Dadzia. And they were talking, 40 to 60 days. And I thought, well, gee, they don't understand northern Saskatchewan. We got long days. We got lots of moisture. I tried a 21-day recovery. It didn't work at all. Because in 21 days, there was nothing recovered. And then I've gone as long as 120 days. And, through experience and trial and error, we've decided that 85 kind of gives us maximum production, adequate nutrition for the cattle. It's a win-win for everything.
So is that 85 days in the growing season?
Yes, yeah. And we don't do basically very little or none non-growing season grazing here. And the reason we don't is our winters are long and hard. We get a lot of snow, so, winter grazing isn't easy to do. And the other thing, our winter feed, like we purchase our winter feed from our neighbors. And hay in northern Saskatchewan is, I wouldn't say it's cheap, but it's relatively cheap. Mm. So we're better to have, a few more cows and graze all our grass in the growing season. By the winter feed we need to get through the winter.
When are you making a grazing plan?
Oh, about right now.
Yeah, so we're talking here
well before the growth starts. And one of the things we do is we feel it's very important to have a day when growth starts. So for example, if growth starts on May the 1st, what you've grazed in April, you can graze that at the end of your first cycle. It hasn't been grazed in this growing season. So we decided, we looked at a lot of different indicators, and the best indicator we came up with is when growth starts, is one day all of a sudden there'd be leaves on the poplar trees here. And in other areas, if they don't have poplars, they'd have some kind of a local tree. When those trees leaf out, what it indicates to us is there's enough heat in the soil that growth is starting to occur. So if that happened to start on May the 1st on a given year, we'd say, okay, we grazed it April 30th, not grazed this year, April 1st, now we start counting our recovery, our 85-day period. Now we start moving our cattle so that we're not overgrazing. But we think that's very important. And in the growth in our area, like we've been as much as early as April 23rd when growth started, and as late as May the 23rd. Hmm. So you just kind of randomly say, well, I'll pick the 1st of May or the 10th of May. You're not going to be right. You're going to be out almost every year, either too quick or too late.
And so you're waiting for that signal before you start grazing. Is that right?
Well, before we start moving, no, we can be grazing, but we don't have to move because you can't damage the plants in the dormant season.
Sure.
If there's no growth, you're not going to overgraze. But once the growth starts, then you have to start to move your cattle to prevent the overgrazing.
One of the things that I've heard repeated many times is that planning is indispensable. Having a plan is worthless, essentially, that those plans are going to get adjusted there. It isn't, you won't have a plan that you stick to exactly as you laid it out from the beginning. So how are you guys adapting during the growing season and during different conditions and different weather patterns and different years?
That's a really good point, Clay, because when you make your plan, like it's, the best we can make today. And then as you move ahead and you start grazing, you adjust however the rain falls, what's the temperature, there's all different kinds of factors that we're all aware of. So you either increase or decrease your recovery. You graze more severely, you graze less severely, you adjust that as you go. And our original plan and our actual plan, which we like, we make the original plan, we monitor, put it on a paper, and then we make the real plan, and it never lines up, but that's okay. What doesn't change is our goal of having adequate nutrition, adequate growth, improving our land. That doesn't change. How we do it changes each year, and it changes several times within the season. So it's basically based on make a plan, monitor it, adjust it according to growing conditions.
How do you decide where to start every year?
Well, we would like to start every year in a slightly different place if we can. We're somewhat limited. Like, we've got three types of land here. We've got what I would call river silt, which starts growth early in the spring and is quite productive land. Then we have peat moss, which starts slower. It's frost stays in the ground longer. And then we have light sandy land. So we can't basically start all over the whole ranch. We either have to start on our river silt or on our sandy land each year, but we try to start in a different pasture and move in a different manner. So what that means, if by some inadvertent fact we're doing some damage by starting on May the 1st, we're not always starting in the same pasture. We're moving around. So this year, this one's May the 1st. Next year, it's May 20th, you know. And that just helps us cover up. If we're making any mistakes, that will help us cover the mistakes.
What's the social context on the ranch? Generations involved? Who's there? Who's involved on a day-to-day decision-making basis?
Like, I was a second generation on the ranch, and I've now turned it over to my children. So I don't have any ownership. I don't have any management responsibilities. I help out as my health allows me, and I'm very healthy. Fortunately, like every day in the summer, I've been able to ride. I'm 76 this year, hoping to ride just like I did last year. So my role is basically a hired man, and I enjoy that role very much. And the ranch is managed by my son, Scott, and Mark, my second son, and his wife, Lucette. So the three of them make a team, and they manage the ranch, and they own the ranch.
And that's kind of where I was headed with that question is who's involved in making the grazing plan every year?
Well, Mark and Blue and Scott.
Gotcha.
Like, I've stopped doing that about 3 years ago. I used to be very involved in that, but about 3 years ago, I just thought it's time for me to get out and let them have free reign. Now, I will add that last year we had a very severe flood and caused a lot of stress, you know, grazing, financial, social stress, etc. So this winter I've been back on the team kind of as a facilitator to facilitate the meetings and maybe add the odd word here and there to help deal with the extra stress we've had. But other than that, I'm just getting outside. I'm the hired man, and it's a great job because if I don't feel like working, I don't have to. And my kids are really good to me. Like, often there's a difficult job comes up, Scott or Mark might say, well, I think, you know, we should do that. And I said, I think you're right. I'll go for horseback riding. So life is good, Clay. Very good.
Yeah, no doubt. I really appreciate that as far as, first of all, a willingness to turn over those reins and having another generation that's interested in taking those responsibilities on. That's a really good, to me, that's a really good indication of a healthy working ranch is the willingness to turn it over and the people that are willing to step into that role.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that and I agree with that. And like, I've been living my dream. I came here in 1972, and of course, before that, I was associated with the ranch through my dad. But from 1972 and up till about 3 years ago, you know, I was just living my dream. I wanted to ranch. I had a wonderful time, wonderful place to raise my family. But I realized I had to get out of the way and let the next generation develop their skills and their talents and their knowledge. And I'm proud to say and share, if anybody happens to listen to this broadcast, I know the ranch is in better hands today being managed by my two sons and my daughter-in-law than it was when I managed it. And I feel really good about that. I don't feel bad about that. I feel wonderful about that.
You mentioned early on that in 1985, the kind of the idea that intrigued you about holistic management was the idea to double the grass production on the ranch. Has that been a reality?
Yes, more than that. Probably triple. And if you want to make money, you know, and a lot of most people that are in ranching want to make money. Some are hobby, but most want to make money. And I would suggest that if you want to make money, the easiest way to make money and the quickest and the most sustainable is to increase your production on a set land base. And you don't increase it by purchasing inputs, you increase it by applying management. So in our case, we've got about a 4,200-acre ranch. If we've doubled our production, that's like somebody giving us a 4,200-acre ranch free. You can imagine what that does for your bottom line.
Yeah, no doubt. And so
that's where the money is.
Yeah. I think we see in America anyways, I've at least heard it pointed out, and I've seen data to back it up that, you know, from Texas to North Dakota, they kind of feed the same amount of hay from, you know, in all those places. Now in Texas, some people are feeding hay because it's low quality forage and they've got to, you know, meet the nutrient requirements of the cow. And in North Dakota, they're feeding hay because it's a lot of snow cover and different things that they're dealing with. So you mentioned that for you, it's better to be able to graze as many cows as you can during the growing season and then purchase hay to feed to them. Is that a function of kind of an unfair regional advantage of being able to get hay affordably? Or is that what's going on there as far as making that work financially?
Well, the biggest thing I would say is that we're focusing on the profit. So when you're talking about feeding hay or not feeding hay, I think that's the wrong question. What the question should be is, how can I increase my profit? And it's kind of universally assumed that if you feed less, you'll make more profit. And that isn't always true, because each ranch is different. Each ranch has advantages and disadvantages. So in our area, as I mentioned earlier, like, there's lots of feed available. Feed in northern Saskatchewan, where we live, is sold at a price that it's worth in the south, less the freight. So that makes the price here relatively cheap. We can graze cattle. When we're grazing, we do a terrific job. Like, we double our stock. And when we're haying, we're just like hay like anybody else. So it's better for us to buy. It's more profitable for us to buy our more cows. The extra cows help pay for the hay.
Sure.
But, you know, one of the things holistic management teaches, like, there's no right or wrong answers. That holistic management would say each rancher has to find his own right answer. And we can give you tools to do that. But we wouldn't come in and say, well, you want to be a holistic manager, you should cut your feeding period down. We would say, you want to be a holistic manager, increase your profit. You're different.
Yeah, very good. What are some of the ways that the land has improved? You've mentioned that you've, you know, probably more than doubled your carrying capacity since you've started applying these principles. And you said earlier that you were grazing so that the land improves. And that's, you know, really, I told you before we started recording the call that, you know, preaching has been paying my bills for about 15 years now. And I have a small ranch here, about 20 miles from the church that I pastor, and we have animals on that land, not for sentimental reasons, not because we like having, you know, four-legged ruminants around, but because we want to improve the land, and we understand that animals are the best way to go about improving that land. So what's at play in grazing so the land improves in your mind? What are some of the things that are happening that help that land improve because of the way you're managing your grazing?
Like, the first thing, if you want the land to improve, you've got to stop the overgrazing. So you do that by, you know, moving your animals, having proper recovery period. Second thing is, you've got to grow more grass. You have to grow more grass than you need. So if you harvest all your grass, your progress towards land improvement will be very slow. But if you can increase your grass growth and you don't need to harvest it all to meet your financial requirements, then that allows you the privilege or the luxury of saying, let's trample down 10% of all the grass we grew, we're going to trample, put that into the biological bank account. What that will begin to do, it'll begin to cover your bare ground. It will begin to start to build a thatch on your land. As soon as you do those two things, you have a more effective water cycle, so you get more use out of the rain you do receive. You have more growth because you're not wasting any solar energy. No solar energy is hitting bare ground. It's hitting a growing plant. You have greater diversity in the soil, and things just improve. So building a thatch and investing in your biological capital. And I want to make the point, like most people, when they have a good year, they say, well, let's get some more cattle. We got more grass than we need. Or else they say, well, let's hay some. We don't want to waste it. And I would suggest that in nature, there is no waste. It's just a cycle. So if you have a good year and you say, man, I don't need that extra grass. I can afford to trample it. When you do, you're investing your biological bank account by making your soil healthier. That healthier soil will give you compound interest and grow more grass for the next 20, 50, 100 years. That's where the money is. And it's so easy to miss that because we're so focused on production.
Has the strategy changed from 1985 until now? And what I mean by that is, were you early on trying to intentionally leave more residual behind to build up that thatch layer? Or how is that? How are you approaching that? Or how are you thinking about those things?
Well, it hasn't really changed. Like we in our goal, we have a written goal in holistic management. And part of it says we want to leave the land better than we found it. So we're always wanting our land to improve. And even though we've more than doubled, probably close to tripled our grass production, it hasn't leveled out. That we can see in the future it's going to be even better. And when we started to improve our grazing, or, you know, do a planned grazing, our grass got taller. And that was, you know, quite impressive and quite noticeable. And then into it a few years, all of a sudden, the grass wasn't quite as tall. But what happened is the plants got so much more dense. So we have a way more plants per square foot. And that's what really shows improved land, and that's what increases your tonnage. So it's just been an ongoing process. And, you know, it just, like I used to say 25, 30 years ago, I used to say, well, you know, things are good. They'll probably get better. We can deal with that. Well, after 30 years, I can say the same thing.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's going to get better.
Wow.
That's not that hard to deal with.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned earlier, you know, not being able to damage the grass in the dormant season. You're not taking away that thatch layer in the dormant season? That thatch layer remains even though you're grazing harder, maybe early in the right before the growing season starts.
Well, you might remove some of your thatch, but I mean that's just the reality of life. You know, and in the big picture, I don't think it makes any difference. You're not in the same pasture every year. Each spring starts at a different time. So you're right when you say that, Clay, but I don't think it's a significant factor.
How about the social impact of grazing? And when I think about this, I was thinking through these things the other day, and people will oftentimes say, oh, I don't have time to move my cows every day. And I was thinking, well, okay, how about you tell me about your typical routine to move cows? And, you know, they start out by telling you about all the people they've got to call to come help, and going out to catch the horses and saddle the horses. And, you know, maybe by the time they've got the horses loaded in the trailer, I've already gone out and let down the hot wire and moved the cows. And I'm back to whatever other task I had to do for the day. And so there's still a whole day's worth of work involved in gathering cows and trailing cows and feeding the crew and all those things. So can you tell me about the social benefits of grazing the way that you do as well?
Yeah, certainly. Like it's it doesn't take very long to move your cattle if you have a plan to move them. See, and one of the things that we do on our ranch, like we strictly run a grazing operation because we buy all our feed. So when we're grazing, that's the only job we have to do. So we've arranged our workload that grazing is the top priority.
Mm.
Now, if we were trying to do 100 other things, like run home and seed some oats and run home and do some haying, et cetera, then all of a sudden the time towards grazing gets very hard and you're always pushed. When we go down to move our cattle, if it takes an hour, that's great. If it takes 2 hours, that's fine. And if we want to have a little sleep in the middle of the day and watch the geese fly over, it takes 6 hours. Who cares? Because that's what our work is. When you're doing a planned grazing, you're working in tune with nature. And nature is slow. People are fast. Like you always want to be ramming and tearing, you know. Holistic managers just slow down and enjoy it. What could be more enjoyable? We're going to start grazing here pretty soon. I'll be riding down the dike with my sons. You know, we're enjoying nature. We're appreciating things. We're grateful for what we have. We've got the time to do it because we've made the time available. And we made the time available because it's important. There's nothing else that you can do that will improve your bottom line like improving your land. You can't buy a machine, you can't buy grass, you can't buy anything. Management is the key.
One of the things that, you know, we're thinking about this summer is we, similar to you, graze, try to hit every acre basically every year, try to start in a different place every year. And this year has been a dry year. We finished off last fall dry, been a dry start to the spring, been dry all winter, which snow, you know, doesn't, when the ground's frozen, the moisture doesn't go in necessarily as well anyways, but it's been a dry year. And so, but we're still planning to take in some cattle, maybe not as many as we did last year on a custom grazing kind of a deal. But we've also planned in the middle of that grazing season, like right in the middle of that grazing season, we've also planned to take a couple of days and take our kids to an event that they really want to go to. And so, you know, my wife and I were kind of working through how do we do this with a grazing business as well. And I said, well, we will, you know, give them more grass than they need for those 2 or 3 days that we're going to be gone. And we'll have somebody come over and check their water. And if the water system fails, we will tell them to take down the hot wire and they can walk back to the barn and water out of the tank. And we'll fix it when we get back. But, you know, I think those are some of the other social benefits, if you've got any similar things to share in that way. But some of the other social benefits of grazing this way are just the freedom of not having to be there, even though it's a daily or every other day or every 4 days type of a moving system. You can still take time and get away if you need to.
Well, I think you explained it very well, Clay. And like what I would say is that you might ask yourself, are you managing the business or is the business managing you? And the way you just described, you want to take a family holiday, so we incorporate that in our grazing plan. Maybe we're going to be gone for a week. Well, okay, we're going to give the cattle a week. Tell me, oh, that's overgrazing. Sure it is. But in the big picture, it doesn't matter. You just overgraze the whole ranch. What if you overgraze one little portion for 1 week? Nobody cares. So you make the ranch work for you. You're not working for the ranch. And it makes all the difference in the world. Like, you know, we get to everything we want to get to because we know it's important. We don't get to everything, but we get to things that are important to us. And I would say we have an excellent quality of life. Like we've gone, you know, through BSE and floods and different things. And I often encourage our sons, especially when they're a little younger and times were tough on the ranches, you know, you don't have to be a rancher because you're third generation. Be a rancher if you like it. And I would say that our families here all believe we have an excellent quality of life. Standard of living is good enough. We could make more money somewhere else, but money's not to be all in the end all. To live a good life, to enjoy your work, to be at peace with your family, that's what's important.
In the Ranching for Profit School, Dallas Mount shows a lot of videos from alumni, and one of them is Derek Schwanebeck, and he makes a statement. He says, since we started grazing this way, I haven't missed a family event. And then he kind of sneaks it in at the end, that I wanted to be at.
Well put, well put. And if you don't want to be there, you can find an excuse. That's okay too.
Nope, got to move the cows. Sorry, can't make it. So when BSE hit, were your sons in their 20s or 30s, somewhere around there, I suppose?
Yeah, they were back at the ranch, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we started out here, like Scott came home in 1997, and we did something kind of different with him. We hired him to be the manager of the ranch, so he was in charge of everything and had, you know, total decision-making process. And he was supposed to get advice from me when I thought he needed it. He's supposed to get advice from me when he thought he needed it, not when I thought he needed it. And that changed everything because I wasn't trying to tell him do this or do that. And the less I tried to tell him, the more he asked me and the more influence I had. Mm-hmm. And Scott's growth was just astronomical. Like, he came home and he's a good young man, but his confidence and his skills just increased because he had the authority and the power to manage it himself. And I was there as an advisor when he wanted advice. That went really well. Mark and Blue came home in 2002, so then there's them and Scott here with us. And, you know, basically we've given them lots of leeway. We've all met on the management team, but they've all had lots of input and lots to say. So they've all been able to grow their skills and their talents. And like we see diversity on the team as being a strength, not as being a weakness. If everybody on your team thinks exactly the same, you only need one person. It's when people see it differently that you can challenge each other and come up with a better solution that neither one of you would have thought about alone.
What are some of the indispensable tools and skills for grazing management?
Well, you have to make a plan. I mean, and you have to get the basic knowledge somewhere. I would suggest you should take a holistic management course, because whatever you invest in taking that course will be repaid, you know, tenfold, a hundredfold in no time at all. So you need to get the knowledge, and then you need to have the discipline to actually do it. You know, because you can have a plan, but if you don't follow the plan or monitor it, what's the point of doing it? So first you need knowledge, and then you need discipline, and after that you just go for it.
What does monitoring look like for you?
Well, basically checking, the big thing is checking the regrowth. So when you're moving your cattle, you can imagine, you got whatever number of pastures you got, and you're monitoring the growth, and you're saying, you know, this is going to be the best year we've ever had in our area. I don't think the plants will need quite as long a recovery. So then you say, okay, what could I do then? Well, then I could move a little quicker to shorten my recovery a little bit. When you go out and the cattle are in whatever pasture, say they're in pasture number 20, and you look at the grass, you say, well, gee, I was supposed to stay here 5 days, but because it's a really good year, there's 6 or 7 days grass, I should stay an extra 2 days. If you do that, you'll be increasing your recovery, but in effect, you should be shortening your recovery. So monitoring is saying, how are things regrowing? When you decide to move the cattle, you don't move by the amount of grass that's in the pasture they're in. You move by how the regrowth is occurring where you started grazing. And if you don't do that, you're always going to be wrong. And just to reverse the talk, if you're in a really difficult year and you're supposed to stay 5 days in a pasture, and you go out there on day four and you say, oh, gee, the grass is all retured, I better move them. So you move them on your gut feeling, you're going to be decreasing your recovery when you should be increasing it. So you're always going to be wrong. The only way is to go out there and say, yeah, it's a really tough year. They've got to graze more severely so that I'll get full recovery. And only a plan and monitoring can tell you that.
What did the ranch look like before you started grazing this way, as far as fence and water infrastructure and you know, kind of the health of the land overall? And what was your strategy as far as grazing and making hay and those kinds of things?
Like when my dad had the ranch, when I was here in my early years, we used to graze, you know, kind of the rougher land. Like our land is on a floodplain of a river, so some of it's bush and gullies, you can't hay it. So we would graze that land, and wherever it's a little bit smoother, and a little bit is a relative term because it wasn't very smooth, we would hay that. And we used to move our cattle. We used to kind of put cows in 30, 35 head in a group, give them two pastures and move them around just, you know, minimal amount. And those 30 or 35 cows got one bull. And then when I got home, we started, you know, to put the herds together, started to build more fence, and just carried on from there. About maybe 10 years ago, or maybe 15 even, we had about 40 pastures, and we set some goals for ourselves. We said we want to improve the land, we want to increase our grass, we want to increase our animals, we want to increase our profit, we want to reduce our workload. And our answer to those five questions was to say, we need more pastures. So we took those 40 pastures and we split them into 100 pastures. And that just made our moves easier, made our stock density higher, made our recovery easier to attain. Everything improved. And that's where we're still at today. We got about 100 pastures. And we move, you know, once a day, not more than once a day very often. Sometimes we stay 3 days. Depends on the land, depends how things are going.
And how have you developed your water to sustain that?
Well, you know, that's one of our advantages here is that we have, because we're on the floodplain of the river and we have a big project with Ducks Unlimited, we have a tremendous amount of natural water. Mm. And when we dug and made our first 40 pastures, we only needed two small dugouts that had water everywhere. So water has not been an issue for us, so I wouldn't really speak to water development. We've done basically nothing. We've used what we have. Mm. And because of our unique situation, we have a lot of water. It's just one of our advantages.
You haven't had to pump water out of the river or anything like that?
No. Mm. And like one of the things that we found is that, you know, when you're doing a planned graze and you're grazing, like you're watering in the slough or watering in the river, you're only there 2 or 3 days and then you're gone basically for 3 months. So you're not detrimental to the water at all. It's when you continuous graze and you're there for 3 months at a time in the same water hole, sure, you're detrimental. Absolutely. But when you're there 3 days and gone for 90, you're not detrimental at all. And then on top of that, we're improving the water cycle on our total land base, which helps the rivers and helps the sloughs. You know, like we've taught a lot of people over the years, and on our own place too, we used to have sloughs. Some have dried up and some have got deeper. And people would say, well, how did that happen? Well, the ones that are due to runoff, if you manage the water cycle better, they're going to decrease in depth. The ones that are due to the water table, if you increase the infiltration of the water into the soil, you're going to raise the water table, those sloughs will get deeper. So often on the same quarter of land, you might have one slough that's drying up, one that's getting deeper, all because you improved the water cycle.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go. It presents some of its own challenges, though, too, having plentiful water sometimes. That land can be fairly delicate.
And I mean, like, you know, water's a big thing. And as you're going to improve or increase your cattle and increase the size of your herds, you need to have good water. That's absolutely critical. But there's lots of good information of, you know, shallow buried pipelines, et cetera, pumping out of dugouts, pumping out of a slough, whatever. There's lots of good information. I'm not a good person to provide that kind of information.
What about calving? How you mentioned you're going to start grazing here in a couple weeks. Maybe later. How does calving play into your grazing plan, or how are you guys approaching your calving season?
When we first got into holistic management, we were calving March 20th. That's the earliest we've ever calved. And as I learned about holistic management, one of the things I learned is get in tune with nature. And if you look around almost anywhere in North America, the wildlife, the deer, the elk, antelope, whatever you're looking at, will have their young in late May and June. And the reason for that is that the young ones survive and the females rebreed. So we said, well, we're not smarter than nature. We're going to move our calving. And we started moving. And of course, we're, you know, cautious. So we moved it back 10 days at a time. We went from the 20th of March. Now we start on the 10th of May. And every time we moved later, the results got better. So we start calving on the 10th of May, trying to duplicate what nature would do. And when we calve, like we'll calve in any one of our pastures, and some of them have got lots of bush, so we ride through once a day. We only check once a day. And, you know, we miss the odd cow. There's no doubt about that. But we're building a herd that is self-reliant. Mm. It's the cow's job to have the calf. It's not my job. And it's her job to know the calf. It's not my job to run down and put an ear tag in its ear so I know it belongs to this cow or that cow. That's the cow's job. So our calving is really quite simple. We just ride out there and we ride through the herd. If we see a problem, we address it. If we don't, we have lunch and then we ride home. Life is good.
Yeah. What about the rotation during calving? Are you moving regularly during calving?
Not as often. Like we might stay a week during the calving period. And not just so we don't have to move so often. Mm-hmm. But we have also gone to 5-day moves and, you know, sometimes even less. And the cows get to know the moves. So they go back and they get their calves and they bring their calves with them. It isn't like it's something new to them. So I would say as a general principle, we've tended to stay a little longer during calving time, and that may not really be necessary, but we're comfortable with it.
What are some pieces of advice related to grazing that you would give people looking to get started out? How would you think about starting out if you were looking to get started today? Would you want to own the land and the cattle, or any pieces of advice related to getting started today?
Well, I think, again, like, you know, everybody's unique, and that's one of the real strengths of holistic management. It recognizes uniqueness. So we don't give formulas and say, here's how you should do it. We say, you're unique, you figure it out. So I would suggest, if you're talking about the grazing, get some education so that you know how to do it, and then make it fit with your finances. You know, there's nothing wrong with grazing somebody else's cattle. There's nothing good about it. It depends on the situation. So make it flexible to your situation. one little formula I'd like to give you, and I was just looking for a chance, maybe this is it. If you often hear, you know, people will say, well, you need 8 pastures to do a good job of grazing, or you need 12 or whatever. And if somebody asked me that question, I would say, I don't know how many pastures you need. And they might be shocked. They'd say, well, we thought you knew something. I say, I do. What recovery period would you like to have? Oh, well, I'm going to have a recovery period of 75 days. Okay, thank you. How often are you going to move your cattle? What's your graze period? Well, I think I'm going to move every 3 days. Okay, now I can give you a formula. Take your recovery period of 75 days, divide it by the graze period of 3, which gives you 25, and you add 1 onto that because the cattle are in a different pasture by themselves. You need 26 pastures if you want to graze in that manner. But nobody can tell you how many pastures you need because you're the expert on your place. And just very quickly, if we took that same formula and somebody else said, well, I want to have a 90-day recovery and I'm going to move every 3 days, they're going to need 31 pastures. Both those answers are right. And you shouldn't look outside of your business to get those types of answers. You should get them from your own knowledge, your own skills, your own goals.
And part of the way to develop that knowledge is kind of back to what we were talking about earlier with the monitoring of where you started and seeing how that recovery is going, where you started and saying, okay, is 31 pastures enough? Is a 90-day recovery period enough? Is it too much? Is 75 more optimal, or making adjustments after you've gotten started, going back and monitoring where you started and seeing how the recovery is going?
Yep. I mean, you got to get the basic knowledge. And I think if you take a course somewhere, they'll probably tell you something like 60 to 90, which is quite a bit of leeway. And then within that 60 to 90, you have to figure out what works for me. What do I want? What are my goals? And like how often you should move your cattle is mostly a function of your labor availability. If you don't have much time, you shouldn't move them as often, as long as you don't overgraze. If you got more time, why not move them a little more often? It's up to you. Like for most of these things, and I guess I've said it often, but I want to say it again, that's the key of holistic management. It says, you're the expert on your place. We can give you principles. You apply them. You apply them differently in your neighbor, but you're both correct.
You mentioned earlier that you anticipate the land continuing to improve, but you also mentioned earlier adding, you know, another 60 pastures to help that improvement, you know, in the recent past. Do you think that there's any barrier now between what you're doing and the continued improvement of the land? Is there any other changes that you see coming down the pike on your ranch that are going to need to be implemented to see that improvement continue?
Not right now, I don't think. You know, and that'll depend on who the managers, the ranches, we go ahead and how they feel about things. But like right now, I think we're sitting pretty good. And we just got to keep going. And, you know, if somebody wants to change it, that's fine. They can go right ahead. See, one of the things holistic management teaches you too is that your business is a tool. So the be all and end all here is not the ranch, it's the people. And we want to use the tool to give us a good quality of life, to give us some profit so we can stay on the land. And we want to leave the land better than we found it. That's what we're striving to do.
How about the community around you? And when I'm talking about the community around you, I'm thinking more of the people around you who are thinking the way you are, encouraging you to continue moving in the direction that you're going, the people that are helping you from outside your business that are helping you make decisions. How important or what role have they played?
Oh, absolutely huge. Totally essential. And especially when I first started, like in 85, in those early years, holistic management was like, for want of a better word, a fringe group. And, you know, we were ignored by everybody and we didn't care because we just talked among ourselves. And we said, gee, that's working for you. How's it going for you, Sam or Pete? And they said, oh yeah, I find this, I find that. And the support of a group like that is absolutely essential. Now, it's not quite as important today because there's more acceptance of holistic management principles. But having a support group so somebody you can phone and say, gee, I'm having this situation. What can I do about it? What do you think? What did you find? It's so helpful. It's priceless. And we always encouraged, like when we used to teach courses, we would set up what we called a management club. So that would be the people that took the course. Normally they were in a, you know, fairly small radius. And we continued or encouraged them to continue to meet after the course so they could sit down once a month and say, well, how's it going? Well, you know, I did this and it really worked well, or I did that, it didn't work so good. I'm having trouble with my teenager. What can you give me advice? You know, it just, we all need love and support. And a management club is a great way to attain that. And I've been very fortunate. We've had outstanding support from a huge, huge number of people that encouraged us, supported us, motivated us. And that's why we're successful. Mostly our success is not due to ourselves. It's due to the wonderful people who helped us.
Do you have any personal goals or ambitions or projects that you're thinking about embarking on in the near future?
Well, I just wrote a book about my dad. He was a pioneer in the Meadow Lake area. I just wrote a book about him, which I had a lot of fun doing, and I finished that. I'm considering I might write a book myself because I've had the opportunity to be involved with so many people through holistic management. So that's kind of on my radar. Other than that, not a lot of things.
So the show notes page for today will be workingcows.net/188. Is there a place I could send people to get a copy of the book that you wrote about your dad?
You know, actually, I only got a few copies, mostly just for my family. Mm. So I don't have them for sale. No, but I appreciate you offering, Clay. That's nice of you to offer.
Sure, absolutely. Well, if you do end up writing a book for yourself, or however you were phrasing that, be sure to let me know. I'd love to point people in the direction of that book.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and I'll let you know if I do one. Now, when we started, you mentioned about drought management. We haven't really talked about that. Did you want to spend a minute or two on that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Just quickly, there's only four or five things I would suggest. Like, if you're in a drought situation, first thing I would suggest, you should slow down so you start to graze more severely, which increases your recovery. And I think everybody can see the common sense in that, because the drier it is, the longer the plants are going to need the recovery. The other thing you do is you combine your herds. If you're running more than one herd, you start to put your herds together, which gives you more pastures, again, more time to get the recovery. You might supplemental feed, and often people say, well, you can't supplemental feed through a drought. And I would say, well, that's up to the individual to decide. If you think you can do it, go for it. If you think you can't, don't. But if you're going to supplemental feed, what I would suggest is you wouldn't wait till you're out of grass and then begin to feed. You'd say, well, I want to increase my recovery, so if I got these cattle here, I can get 4 days. Let's feed them for 1 or 2 days, and now we got 6 days, so we get more recovery of every pasture ahead of us. Then we move to the next pasture, we graze our 4 days, we feed for two. So if you're going to supplemental feed, I would suggest doing it in that manner. And then the other thing is, at some point, you're going to say, I'm going to have to destock. Have I got some yearlings I can sell? Should I sell my dry cows? Whatever it is. But put a date and say, you know, if we don't get rain by the 15th of June, I'm going to destock by X percent. The general rule being, the earlier you destock, the less you'll have to destock, because you'll have more grass for the animals that are left. And those four, I think, used in the terms of every ranch is unique, gives you a pretty good direction for a drought situation. One of the things I would always suggest, and that's whether you're starting or in a drought, you always want to have more grass than you have cattle, you know. Mm. And Bud Williams, you've probably all heard of him. He's a low-stress handler, livestock handler. And he used to say the cattle business is made up of three things. There's money, grass, and there's cattle. You can have too many cattle, can't have too much grass or too much money. And that's an important little tidpoint to keep in mind.
So yeah, I'm staring down the barrel of a drought here. We'll see what the rest of the spring brings. I've already had conversations with a guy that's supposed to bring me some custom cattle to graze for him. That, you know, we might not take as many as we took last year. I think last year the first of them showed up May 24th in our area. You know, predominantly our moisture comes in May and June, and we have a lot of cool season grasses. And I've asked this question to other people before. This land has, well, the east half of the ranch that I'm on has been hayed every year. And so there is a lot of there's a lot of plant spacing, a lot of big open spaces between plants. There isn't a lot of thatch layer on the ground or anything like that. The back half has been hayed less often, so it's in better shape, better thatch and some of those things. I've considered basically just using the back half and letting the front half recover or grow up. And then if we did get rain, maybe using that front half a little differently or more. But I guess that's a long way around asking the question, and maybe this is a false dichotomy between two options, and you can tell me if you think it is. But if it came down to the option of increasing recovery period or leaving more residual behind, would you tend to choose one of those over the other?
Well, the amount of residue you can leave will be determined by the growing season, good or bad. You have to get the recovery. The recovery is always the most important thing. So don't sacrifice your recovery to leave residual. That's backwards for sure. I understood you. Am I answering your question properly?
Yeah, and you're the second person to tell me the same thing, so I'm starting to see a trend.
The recovery is number one thing, always.
Yeah.
And that's why you graze more severely or less severely, so that you can get your recovery. So in a difficult year, in fact, if you think back, I mentioned at one point, when you want to make a deposit into your biological bank account, you do it in a good year. This year, you might say, well, it's a tough year. I'm not going to improve my land. That's the breaks. But I'm not going to go backwards because I'm not going to overgraze. So at least I stayed at a zero. That's all right. Nothing wrong with that at all. Next year, you have a really good year and you make a huge deposit into your biological bank account. That's life. So yep. Don't feel impelled that you got to improve your land this year. You have to not overgraze. That's all.
And that's kind of what I've been thinking my plan would be, was to, last year we kind of did make a deposit on some of that land, I think. And so this year I think we might be making a withdrawal, but this is only our second year of being able to manage where we were the only ones responsible for making decisions and we were the ones writing the checks. So I'm still learning I'm kind of thankful that this year happens to be a dry year. It gets me to think a little bit harder and I think sharpen that management axe a little bit better.
And don't be too hard on yourself and look at the principles. That's what you got to go by, is the big principles. And you know, yes, it's nice to improve your land every year. Is it realistically? Maybe not. That's all right. And the other thing, that you're getting custom cattle, so that gives you a lot of flexibility. And I would certainly suggest you might talk to your supplier of the cattle and say, you know, we're going to take this many head, but if things get tough, we're going to have to send them home 1st of June, 1st of July, whatever, and so that he's prepared. And with custom cattle, that usually isn't too big a deal, especially if they're feeder cattle. I just said you got a lot of flexibility built in because of the custom grazing.
Right. Generally, he sends me his light yearling heifers, so it's not like he's really he's really too worried about them.
Right.
Don, I really appreciate your time today. I will put some links in the show notes page to Holistic Management, Holistic Management Canada, and send people that direction. I imagine they could find upcoming courses and different things like that. So,
exactly, yep.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Jay. I've enjoyed it very much. I appreciate you calling.
Yeah, very much. Thank you. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Jay.
Very good stuff there. Really appreciate Don coming on the show. Looking forward to next week. We got Zach Smith coming back, talking more stock cropper things and really going to get into some of the nuts and bolts and the economics and the finance of the stock cropper and how it's working out and kind of the difference that he's seeing it make, even just from a what was harvested perspective. What did the acres that had the stock cropper produce from a economic value perspective versus what did the acres that did not have, I should say, the stock cropping. It is the Cluster Cluck 5000. So what did those acres do versus what did the other acres do? So looking forward to that. As always, encourage you to go to the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/188, and You'll find some links there. I encourage you to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. There will be a link up there, workingcows.net/188, so that you can click through and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer to find us. So looking forward to next week with Zach Smith for episode 189. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.